Welcome to Current State on WKAR. There's another interesting account in my Twitter feed today about a homeless high school who has surmounted being homeless and is graduating from a respected New York City high school. This is 18-year-old Paul Turner. The New York Daily News describes his road as rocky. His father died in 2010. Then Turner and his mother spent years moving between New York and Pennsylvania and in Detroit, as it turns out. They're now living in a New York City homeless shelter, in fact. But the bright teen is graduating on time from the Facing History School in Manhattan. He's won a $5,000 scholarship and headed off to Hamilton College in the fall. Paul Turner says, "My job was to be in school and focus. It was a way to avoid any trouble. As long as I was doing my work, no one would mess with me." And this story is a logical entree into our first segment here today on Current State. Jimmy Ramirez lives in Ann Arbor, where he works for Google. The California native is part of a unique competition dubbed Crash the Parties. Two winners of the competition will get to report from the Democratic or Republican National Convention on the cable channel Fuse TV. Jimmy's the son of immigrants who lived and worked in California. A few years ago, he became temporarily homeless. He went on to become the first in his family to graduate from college. Jimmy Ramirez joins me now. Welcome to Current State, Jimmy.
Oh, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Explain this competition for us. How did you become eligible for this chance to report from a political convention?
Yeah, so I've worked with Voto Latino, which is a organization focused on getting young Latino voters registered to vote for some time now. Followed them on Twitter, and they had this amazing competition to basically report from, like you said, from the DNC or RNC, and made a video at the Heidelberg Project in Detroit, and then kind of just put my story out there, and then made top 10.
And who or what will determine the winners?
So the way the Rachel Maddow and a series of very, very prominent media personalities actually get to choose who gets to go.
Okay.
So it was a public voting process, and then once you make that leg of the race, then it goes on to a panel of judges.
And when do you get the word?
It is launched on Saturday, so
okay.
We find out Saturday.
Now, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how eager are you to win this competition?
A solid 10, but the competition is amazing and wouldn't be disappointed in anyone that they choose. So we get to see everyone else's videos, and my mom and I have actually been texting about the competition, and they're incredibly just competent and just incredible examples of our community.
A lot of the auditions, including Jimmy's, you'll find on YouTube or on the Fuse TV channel, Fuse TV website, I should say. Why are you so eager to win?
I really want to ask candidates about questions that affect low-income communities, and particularly low-income communities of color. My background prior to Google and some of the work I do outside of Google is actually working with homeless youth and youth experiencing homelessness. And we find particularly mostly these youth come from disparate backgrounds or are from communities of color. And so I do really just want to ask formative questions on how this population is getting the policy needs that they need to survive.
Now, you have the choice of covering the Democratic or Republican conventions if you win. You've already said you'll go to the Democratic event if you win. Why the Dems?
Correct. So I think that there's a series of robust conversations happening as far as how to help these particular communities happening at the DNC that are very, very much pushing the envelope on how we can help these communities. And so being there to ask and kind of reinforce that would just be something I would be honored to do.
You're a young guy. You've probably voted only once or twice for president, I imagine.
Yeah.
Have you voted Democratic?
Oh, yes. My first ballot actually was, my 18th birthday was for President Barack Obama in 2008. So
okay.
Kind of have a really stellar just voting history I get to tell my kids later.
Well, so have you thought about what developments or angles that you would cover at the convention if you win?
Yes, definitely understanding how we're preparing the next generation of Latino leaders. What are we doing to make sure that they are entering high skill job force, you know, particularly working at Google, I'm very, very interested in STEM and how we're getting, you know, making future Latino engineers, like how is that happening? Making sure that, you know, education is thought out for the future.
I'm talking with Jimmy Ramirez of Ann Arbor. Jimmy's a Google employee and one of 10 finalists for a chance to become an embedded reporter from either the Democratic or Republican national conventions next month. Jimmy's going to the Dem convention if he wins. This is a competition sponsored by the cable channel Fuse TV and the organization Voto Latino. There's an effort to unite the party right now and get Sanders supporters to throw their support behind Hillary Clinton, and it's a source of some tension here. That might make an interesting angle from the convention as well.
Exactly. I think we're seeing something just something fantastic within within politics right now, and just the utter basis of democracy. We're having this exchange of ideas and what is best, and what, you know, even within our party, what people are thinking is the next move. And I think that nothing but awesomeness and kind of great policy reforms can come out of this. I think particularly Secretary Clinton's, you know, delegate win of delegates here just is absolutely phenomenal. Being the first female to have that many delegates is just incredible. I do think that Senator Sanders' dialogue around certain issues have definitely pushed our party to think further.
Are you concerned at all about the unwillingness, perhaps, of some Sanders supporters to get behind Secretary Clinton?
No, I'm particularly interested in at the end of the day making sure that the candidate that the DNC puts up and the candidate that ultimately takes the White House is looking out for the future, right? Looking out for, and in my case, and in a lot of my reporting angle, low-income communities of color. And so can we equip that candidate with all the best resources to do so? Making sure that we can actually make that happen I have total faith in my party.
You're considering this an exciting opportunity because of your particular background to an extent, which is very interesting. Tell us about your family and the circumstances you grew up in.
Yeah, so my grandparents immigrated from Mexico. They were migrant laborers, so they picked, you know, everything from cotton to almonds to, you know, grapes in California. And they ended up migrating outside of San Francisco, where they had my parents, and then I'm a second generation American, and just seeing their love for, you know, they came to this country for this idea of democracy and civic engagement and just working hard. And that has just been the ethos and what has allowed me to go from, you know, a public school in California to actually, you know, just having access to the fact that I'm in Michigan on this, you know, on this radio show. Unreal, like having opportunities to work at Google or graduate from Georgetown really is what my grandparents came to this country for, and I feel like that resonates within the Latino community very much so.
You're living the dream, so to speak.
yes, and I think that one thing that, you know, and the one thing that is really important talking about the Latino community is that we are not a monolithic, you know, not everyone is a Democrat or a Republican. There's not really one kind of, we are not a one single issue community. And with that, I think that the American dream is at the epicenter of what it means to be a Latino voter and be part of this community. And, you know, different Latinos might interpret that in different ways, whether that be with, you know, the Republican Party or with the Democratic Party. We all have different interpretations. American dream is at the center.
Do you think the media, do you think those of us in the media have dropped the ball to some extent and presented the Latino community as a monolithic community?
I think that the 2008 election and the absolute, you know, inspiration that President Barack Obama brought and the voter turnout that had, and just his overall ability to connect with millennials as well as, you know, voters of color, what has kind of, you know, spoken to this larger trend of, you know, you could win this community. But I do think that in particular the rhetoric around, like in recent time, have have pushed the media to kind of dive into what the Latino community is actually thinking.
Mm-hmm. What particular challenges do you remember growing up as the son of migrant laborers in California? What was the biggest challenge there?
I think my community was pretty diverse, and it was just very apparent that walking into like AP level courses or courses that were more advanced, I was just perpetually the only person of color most of the time. And so being a person of color in these spaces has been particularly interesting. But I think that the value that I bring with my background, my story, my perspective have just been really just an ultimate strength, I guess, turning that struggle into a strength.
When your parents were working in the fields, I mean, did you work alongside them ever?
No. So to be clear, my parents, so my mom actually worked in a hair salon. So my grandparents.
It was your grandparents who were, migrant workers. Okay.
Yeah. So a second generation American, my parents. So seeing my mom go from a hairstylist to, cutting hair supercuts to being a paralegal and then just us going to school together alongside one another, absolutely just awe-inspiring to see where my family has come, and I think it's indicative of how my community is progressing.
Your nuclear family, though, your mother and your sister and yourself, did become homeless for a spell. How did that unfold?
Correct. So during the 2008 recession, we had a home foreclosure, which forced us to kind of, the way my mom describes it beautifully, is the ship sank and we were all surfing. And so part of that, yeah. And one thing that, about particularly youth homelessness is that homelessness itself, it doesn't indicate, being on the street or, literally, or panhandling, as one image might say, like, some of the images that come to mind. So I was a couch surfing youth, which meant I was really skilled at finding a lot of slumber parties to attend and a lot of friends who were kind enough to open up their homes. And during that process, actually, my school, which was really nice that my school actually found out, and my administration actually came together, figured out what's going on, and actually one of my teachers actually took me in. So
wow.
I did have a little bit of a stable period, but again, it wasn't my home. It wasn't picture frames that showed my family. It was, surfing alone.
Yeah, couch surfing youth. How doubtful was it that you would be able to attend college?
Oh, my mom has, ever since I was younger, told me I was going to college. So that has always been part of my just life motivation, just like, eat food, get ready for college. That
wow.
was like always just my upbringing. I think that during, I was actually homeless during the application process for college. So if anyone's ever done that process, it's pretty stressful, but not having a stable home on top of that is tough, and not being able to pay for things like the SAT or prep or anything like that. So I actually took the SAT the last possible chance. I didn't have access to my Social Security card because, you don't have keep track of those things as a young person, let alone when you don't have a stable house. So it was tough to kind of – I thought I would go to community college beforehand and kind of figure it out from there, but – my university was incredibly understanding, incredibly helpful in that process.
And that was Georgetown University, we'll point out. So despite your couch surfing youth, you never lost your focus of attending college. We're just about out of time. I want to ask you one more question here. You've alluded to what you dislike about the broader national conversation involving immigration and undocumented immigrants. What should America's policy be? What would you like to say about what America's policy should be toward undocumented people who are here illegally?
I think that the conversation and the narrative right now is that it's missing the inherent, like the innate strength and asset that our community, like that, being from a mixed status family and coming from grandparents who are formerly undocumented and having relatives who are undocumented. We are a strength, we are an asset. And I think that that's often neglected to understand how our economy functions and understanding that, we bring something. So, I've done work in, like, for example, in Immokalee, Florida, a lot of those who are on a temporary work program who actually produce our food, right? And so I think that just most of, I don't have like a sweeping policy, you know, that's going to fix everything, this robust system in one day. But I think as far as coverage and thinking about it, like, let's think about the strengths this community is bringing before we villainize or do anything similar to that.
Jimmy Ramirez is a Google Ann Arbor employee and one of 10 finalists for a chance to become an embedded reporter from the Democratic or Republican national conventions. This is a competition, Crash the Parties, sponsored by the cable channel Fuse TV and the organization Voto Latino. Jimmy, we'll be watching. I hope you win. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much.
And coming up on Current State, World Refugee Day is coming up, and the city of Lansing has created an entire week of events to celebrate the resiliency of refugees. We'll talk with St. Vincent Homes Community Outreach Coordinator Marissa Nally to find out more. Well, the Lansing Bike Party is a group that goes on casual bike rides throughout the capital city several times a week. Its members revel in riding around town at a leisurely pace, chatting, playing music, and taking sometimes spontaneous detours. They always end their excursions at a fun destination, often a restaurant, bar, or a swimming pool during the summer. Jeff Potter's the organizer of the Lansing Bike Party, and Current State's Katie Cook met up with him to learn how the party got started.
Well, it was an attempt to find the fun in doing things downtown and the fun in bike riding.
Lansing Bike Party!
Bike Party rocks! Party by bike!
A lot of times, it seems like bike riding can be done mostly for, say, fitness or just riding to work and back, and we noticed that maybe the local bike riders were maybe becoming just older, and when groups of bikers got together, they were mostly older white guys. So when we first started encouraging social riding around town, we noticed that a greater diversity of people was showing up, and that set off alarm bells, like, this is a way of riding that a wider variety of people like. So we just thought, let's run with it, let's do it, let's see where it goes.
Mandy Hall has been riding with the Lansing Bike Party for about a year. She describes the variety of people that come on rides.
You get people who are very, very serious, are involved in different race type scenes. You get people who commute regularly to school or to work. And then you get people who haven't ridden since they were kids and have decided that they want to start riding again. And I think that's one of the benefits of Bike Party, is that it's a really good space for people who want to do something that's a little active and a little out of their comfort zone. And it's just fun, and it's a good area so that they can learn how to ride their bikes again, you know?
I asked Jeff what makes Lansing Bike Party fun.
Well, we go slow, and so anyone can do it on any bike. So there's no economic or technological barrier. In a lot of bike riding nowadays, the bikes are kind of expensive and even fragile, and that tends to limit who has them. But on our rides, anybody's bike of any kind, if you put air in the tires and put the seat up where it fits the person, they can join in and have fun. So it increases the amount of people who could participate. But another thing that makes the rides fun is the fact that we bring music along on the rides. Several of the riders on every ride will bring small boom boxes and play tunes of various kinds that seem to fit well with the biking. And it's interesting to notice what kinds of music goes well with biking, and some does better than other. And people who like the different kinds will ride in the group near the music that they like. And it works out really well. Music and biking do go together, and it's really fun to experience that.
Joni Meyer is relatively new to the group.
I've been going to the Lansing Bike Party about 6 months. And, you know, as urban social riding, it's been very wonderful. It's a new experience, you know. I've lived in Lansing about 15 years, and there's a lot of places that we've gone that I didn't even know existed. So That's pretty amazing.
Eric Swift is a serious cyclist, so for him, the bike party is a whole new kind of ride.
Like, you see people in their natural setting, and we just get to interact with them, be it if we're walking in the streets, in their houses, on porches, whatever. We wave, they say hi, we say hi. And it's an enjoyable experience throughout. It's something that I never got to enjoy on a bike before. Usually, you know, I'm out on a ride by myself and I'm focusing on my riding and just going. Here, it's all about the environment, the community, seeing things and going places I've just never been before in a party atmosphere, which is really cool.
Jeff explained that there are several types of rides every week, but he'd like to see even more.
On Fridays, that's our biggest ride, after work, TGIF sort of thing. We're at about 50 people, and that's quite sizable. Midweek rides are more like, you know, 5, 10, 20. We also have some weekend rides, and that's about the same. But our Friday ride has the most notoriety, and that's where the most people show up. People can host their own rides. You can just say, I want to ride to the farmer's market in Holt. Say where you're starting and when, and people might show up and join you, and you can ride to Holt together. It seems like groups of about a dozen are the most fun. Personally, I especially like rides that people like who are underrepresented in other rides in this area. So, say younger people, women, minorities, families, those kinds of rides I sense as being the greatest need around here. So I would really enjoy encouraging that the most.
Then I talked to Brian. Mandy gives him a nice introduction.
So Brian is the group's bike GPS. He has an entire map of the greater Lansing area just inside of his head, and he is always very good at finding us fun, interesting routes to go on.
Is that true, Brian?
I guess I'm a map in the head type of guy, and like looking for little wormholes and just find a route that's like a little more interesting, a little quirkier than what you normally do. It's pretty easy to impress people with Lansing because most people haven't seen most of the streets.
How'd you get hooked up with Lansing Bike Party?
Well, I've been riding around by myself for years. I thought, it'd be fun to ride with some other people, and this seemed to be a pretty easy way to do it.
What's your favorite part about it?
Meeting all kinds of new people. I mean, it's quite a variety of people who I don't have another way to meet. You know, people tend to keep to their own most of the time, but it's great to get, you know, it's amazing how well people can get along with each other who maybe normally wouldn't have any chance to get together.
So what would you say to somebody who wants to join the bike party but they don't know anybody in the group?
It's not a problem. You know, just show up and ride, and if you don't want to talk with anybody, you really don't have to. You can just ride along, and odds are you'll find somebody that you like, though. Actually, you'll probably like most everybody. In fact, probably you'll like everybody.
Jeff agrees with the other bikers that the relationship they have with the people in the neighborhoods they ride through is a real highlight of the rides.
We have wonderful relations with the neighborhoods we ride through. We are saying hi to the people on porches, and we're positively interacting with car drivers all the time. And that is a great change of pace compared to how bikes often interact with cars, considering them to be threats. They're not threats to us. We've had zero incidents in hundreds of rides. We get happy honks at us continuously. Maybe we get one mean honk a summer. And it is really uplifting to get positive eye contact with car drivers and to even chat with them. It kind of recharges your batteries for doing other things during the week. I mean, car drivers don't generally have people smile at them. Driving is boring for them, too. But we try to help spread the fun to everybody we're around, and I think we're doing it.
Lansing Bike Party!
For Current State, I'm Katie Cook.
How's it going?
And coming up on Current State, Michigan and the Great Lakes region is rich in classical music and more this summer. Resident classical music guys Jamie Paisley and Peter Wharf take us on a preview tour. That and more after the break on Current State. That's Hank Horton and Chris Rollins performing live in Studio S here back in January. It's a track rather inappropriately called How Insensitive. It's actually a very nice, sensitive sound there. Hank Horton and Chris Rollins. We've got another great live music Friday ready to go for tomorrow. We welcome the Pat Zelenka Project. Hard to put them into one category. They call themselves a rock, soul, jam, funk band. They are from Lansing. The Pat Zelenka Project, our guest for Live Music Friday tomorrow here on Current State from WKAR. We hope you can join us. I'm Mark Bayshore. The United Nations has designated June 20th of every year as World Refugee Day. In the city of Lansing, the commemoration lasts an entire week. World Refugee Awareness Week is hosted by St. Vincent Catholic Charities. Here to tell us more about the week's events and efforts involving refugee settlement is Community Outreach Coordinator Marissa Nally. Marissa, welcome to Current State.
Thanks for having me.
Just remind us, I think a lot of people know St. Vincent is pretty heavily involved in refugee settlement and all kinds of refugee services. Just kind of give us an overview of what the bread and butter is, well, all the things that you offer.
Sure. So we are the designated refugee resettlement program in the area, which means that we are responsible for providing all those immediate services to families, greeting them at the airport, locating housing, helping them as they adjust to life here in the United States. We're really their first stop, and we try to get them as set up as we possibly can.
Do you offer help with employment?
We sure do.
Okay.
We do a lot of extensive employment trainings. We have a really wonderful employment team who makes great relationships with employers throughout Lansing and really works to get our individuals in employment opportunities that are right for them.
Can you zero in on a single most important function that you offer here? What's really the heart and soul of your role? Can you evaluate it that way?
My role as an individual or agency?
As the agency.
I think it's orientation. We do so much orientation, cultural orientation, housing orientation, employment orientation, health orientation. Just giving people that information about what things may be different here than what they are used to so that they can be prepared when they're in those new experiences that are happening. Mm.
And how many refugees in an average year do you assist?
We assist an average of about 600, but last year we did serve 625, and this year we've actually been upped to expect 735, so quite the increase this year.
Is there a pattern to which parts of the world mid-Michigan's refugees come from?
It kind of depends. At St. Vincent Catholic Charities, we have an extremely diverse incoming population because we have a diverse community. So we're really able to support people coming from all over the world, whereas some communities throughout the United States might have a very homogeneous group. We're diverse enough that we can basically resettle anyone.
Mm. Before we get into this week's events, I want to ask you about Syrian refugees in particular. Here in Michigan, the Detroit Free Press reported last month of a likely spike in resettlements in Michigan and across the country. Is St. Vincent anticipating a spike of Syrian refugees in particular here in the Lansing area?
We are. So we have just started to resettle Syrians here in the Lansing area over the last month, and we're expecting to see quite a large number coming in before September, which is the end of our fiscal year. But we are also seeing kind of a general overall spike in our arrivals from all over the world.
And I'm led to believe that with regard to Syrian refugees in particular, the president announced months and months ago that he wanted to settle 10,000 here in the United States, but apparently that effort's been we're playing catch up here in that effort, apparently. Now, the United Nations declared a national World Refugee Day. How did that day turn into a week-long celebration here in Lansing?
That's a great question. So we started out celebrating World Refugee Day. St. Vincent Catholic Charities, as well as other organizations in the Lansing area who support refugees. And there was just such an amazing turnout, and everybody kind of has their own niche, that we decided to make this a bigger celebration, a week-long celebration, so that we could really engage the community for a longer amount of time to really educate about refugees in the area.
Mm. Now, the week kicks off with a 5K race this Saturday. Pretty festive start to the week. Tell us the details about the race.
Sure. So the Welcoming the Stranger 5K Family Fun Run is St. Vincent Catholic Charities event. It is a free event which takes place Saturday morning at Hawk Island Park. And it's just really a time for the community to get together and celebrate refugees and just learn something. And we were really excited to start a race because people may come who love to run but who don't know anything about refugees, and they can learn something that day, which will be great.
A question pops into my head here. You settle on the average 600, maybe up to 700 refugees in a typical year. Do most of those families and people stay in mid-Michigan, or do you track them? Do you find out, do they move out of the area, or do they become Michiganders?
Many of them become Michiganders. We have a lot of individuals who stay here and make their homes here. And we even have people who may have been resettled in a different state who find their way to Lansing because they have heard about what a welcoming community it is that we have here and the established ethnic communities that we do have in the area.
You must be proud of that. I'm speaking with St. Vincent Catholic Charities Community Outreach Coordinator Marissa Nally about the events of the upcoming World Refugee Awareness Week. Let's go chronologically through the rest of the week's events. We've got Refugee Sunday, which will involve several faith-based organizations. Who's involved in this? What will be happening?
So a lot of the parishes that are involved with supporting St. Vincent Catholic Charities will be just mentioning, you know, in their weekly sermons, refugees, why we should serve them, why we should be a welcoming and loving community, as well as many organizations and churches throughout the Lansing area, which is a really great support for us because faith-based organizations help us so much.
Next Monday, the 20th, is National Refugee Day. What's planned for that?
So this is a really exciting day because on Monday we have our GIL graduation, or Global Institute of Lansing. And what that is it's actually a high school graduation, formal cap and gown, everything, for students who are in our GIL program, which is a high school accreditation program for adults who have maybe aged out of the regular school system or have not even ever had the opportunity to have a high school education. And rather than receiving an alternative certificate, they receive a high school diploma.
So these are people well over the age of 18, typically?
Correct.
Okay. How many are graduating this year?
I believe we have 5 graduating this year, and I think this year they are going to top 50 graduates from the time the program has started,
neat.
Which is really exciting.
How neat. On Tuesday, Peckham will be giving a presentation. We've had Peckham on Current State here before, and a lot of people know the great work they do. What will they be addressing with regard to refugees?
So they're going to be talking a lot about the services that they offer in general regarding employment, but really those services that are applicable to our refugee families. So ESL classes, Pathway to Citizenship classes, different supports that they have that other organizations may not for non-English speakers or low-level English speakers.
Now, Wednesday, there is a viewing of a documentary with an intriguing title, When Elephants Fight is what it's called. This is showing at the downtown Lansing Library. Tell us about this film, When Elephants Fight.
So this film is about the Congo, and I will say this is not a family-friendly film.
Okay.
It is going to be really real world, talking about what kind of conflicts produce refugees coming out of Congo. And there's also going to be a question and answer session afterwards with the director of the film.
So the director's in town as well.
That's correct.
How interesting. Thursday, a potluck with the Greater Lansing Food Bank. Where does that happen?
So the garden project, the Greater Lansing Food Bank, is so wonderful because many of our refugees come from an agricultural background, so they really get involved with the gardening project. So they're going to be showcasing one of their new gardens at Orchard Court, which will be really great.
And Friday, there's a peace poll. Those of us in East Lansing or aware of East Lansing might be aware of the peace poll here. There's a peace poll unveiling and press conference at Lansing City Hall. Remind our listeners what a peace poll is.
Sure. So the peace poll says, may peace prevail on earth in 12 different languages. And it's just a reminder of what peace can accomplish, and a reminder that we are a welcoming community and we plant them in Lansing to assure people that that's who we are and to remind people to keep being that way.
Is St. Vincent looking for more volunteers? I know you've got a cadre of volunteers you rely on. Is there room for more?
There's always room for more. We have an online application process, and I'm happy to say that I probably get 2 to 5 volunteer applications every week, and I'm always happy
to
see
them.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
That's a lot.
And that's just my program. I can't speak to the other programs, but I know that they also appreciate the influx because we serve a lot of people, and you know, really having the opportunity to have that human connection is really helpful.
Absolutely. I go way back with St. Vincent Home here in one capacity or the other. You've been doing great work for many, many years. I can't imagine how expanding it must be for a volunteer to get the chance to work with a refugee from another part of the world. That could change your whole life.
It changed my life. That's how I got involved with what I'm doing now.
No kidding.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we want to thank Marissa Nally, Community Outreach Coordinator at St. Vincent Catholic Charities, about the events of the upcoming World Refugee Awareness Week. Marissa, good luck. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Current state on 90.5 WKAR, always at WKAR.org. I'm Mark Bayshore. You may have been hearing a new voice popping up here on WKAR. Brooke Allen is a 20-year broadcasting veteran who just wrapped up 3 years delivering and reporting the news at WWJ Radio in Detroit. She is slowly making her way into the local host's chair on Morning Edition, and this is your official welcome to WKAR. Brooke, we're glad you're here.
Well, thank you so much. Good morning.
How long have you been broadcasting in Detroit?
Probably a total of 8 years. So.
Okay, and the last three, delivering and reporting the news at AM 950 WWJ.
Yep.
And I know you did some radio and some television, though, in Detroit. What kind of stories are you drawn to? What kind of stories have you covered?
Well, you know what? I love the criminal justice system. In fact, I say if I hadn't gone into broadcasting, I probably would have become a lawyer. And I don't know if that's because of my love of Law and Order. You know, I just love that show. And I just love the criminal justice system. I think there are so many stories to tell. Mm. Drunk driving. I'm an advocate for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, actually, having been personally affected by a drunk driving crash. So there's so many stories out there to tell, and people are affected by more than just the quick sound bites that we're able to tell sometimes.
Sure. Well, that's what we try to do on this program here. We're looking forward to your becoming a part of Current State as well, beyond being the Morning Edition host here at WKAR. I know you intend to become more familiar with Mid-Michigan here.
I'm very excited about that.
You're going to be out and about to do that. Where are you going and what are you doing?
Well, you know what? I think next week I'm going to go to Washington Street, the Capitol, and I'm just going to go around and probably around lunchtime, I'm going to look for the best coffee shop in town because, as everyone knows, I love coffee. I love espresso, and I can't live without it, so that's one of my vices. So if you have any helpful hints, please direct me that way.
What's your email here, then?
We
might as well open this up to our listeners and take some ideas.
I don't know that I know my email offhand.
She's that new.
You give them your email.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. Actually, current state at WKAR.org will work just fine for any email involving current state, anybody on the staff. Current state at WKAR.org. Let us know.
Coffee in the subject line, right?
Okay. Yeah.
How's that?
That's
Does
right.
that work?
Caffeine.
Caffeine for Brooke. That would be good.
Coffee and other forms of caffeine.
Exactly.
Did you grow up in Michigan?
I did, actually. I grew up in Michigan, and then I aspired to be an actress. So then when I was 19 years old, I hit the highway and I went to California. And that's where I was up until 8 years ago.
And it's at some point acting transitioned into broadcast.
It did. Yeah, it did indeed. Yeah. So one reality show under my belt. Thank goodness it never aired. I'm glad to say that.
Interesting.
Yes. So.
Well, Brooke Allen, we are glad you are here. And we look forward to your tenure as host of Morning Edition here on WKAR, local host, and to your contributions to Current State. We wish you nothing but the best.
Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Summer music means music festival time here in Michigan and the Great Lakes states. Classical music plays a big role in several major events around the region. Classical music hosts Jamie Paisley and Peter Worf bring us this summer sound preview.
Jamie, we're going to talk about the rich scene of music in the summer in Michigan and in the Great Lakes region, specifically classical music, but in some cases we range a little bit beyond. So
yeah,
we're going to talk about three places in Michigan, I believe, and then I'm going to take you on kind of a day's drive, too, as we listen to classical music. So you go first.
I guess I'm going to start with like one of the standards, like the standard bearer, even, when it comes to summer festivals here in Michigan. That's the Interlochen Festival, which you can find over at interlochen.org. But as a choral person, I'm really thrilled that they are bringing the King Singers.
Gaudete, gaudete, Christus es natus, ex Maria Virgine, gaudete. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus es natus, ex Maria Virgine, gaudete. Tempus aedes gratiae, accordatabamus, carmina letitiae, devote redamus. Gaudete, gaudete, Christus es natus, ex Maria Virgine, gaudete.
King Singers coming to Interlochen, as well as they're going to be doing this kind of concert with the World Youth Symphony Orchestra. They've got a few concerts, but they're having the conductor Christopher Roundtree lead them in, you know, standards of kind of turn-of-the-century repertoire. They're doing the Firebird Suite by Stravinsky, mm-hmm. fantastic, as well as Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, and a work that was recently released by the Kalamazoo Symphony. They're bringing it up to Interlochen. It's the kind of enfant terrible nowadays of composition, Nico Muhly, yeah. and his work, So Far, So Good. So it's, you know, two war horses and then one new thing. I like that kind of programming.
Let me take you to some spots nearby and some spots mainly around the Detroit metropolitan area in this year's Great Lakes Chamber Music Festival. Music director, artistic director Paul Watkins is kind of bookending now the second part of two bookends. Last season, it was a focus on American music. This year, a focus on English music. And I really like the way he combines venue and repertoire choice. Sacred spaces, St. Hugo of the Hills, Christ Church, Grosse Pointe, Temple Bethel in Bloomfield Township, and the beautiful Kirk in the Hills at the Cranbrook Academy campus, a place where you'll feel like you're in any old English town. It really does rival any church that you would see. Beautiful venue. Think Henry Purcell being performed there, as well as Elgar and many other English favorites that Paul Watkins will be featuring on the series. But I also want to focus on the closest venue to our backyard here in East Lansing, and that's the Carytown Concert House in Ann Arbor, where tomorrow night they'll be playing a couple of major works, a Mozart duo for violin and viola, and Schubert's string quartet Death and Maiden, plus a listen to some of the music of Paul's brother, Hugh Watkins, and his piano trio. That's tonight at the Carytown Concert House in Ann Arbor. Two more concerts coming up, Elgar's Piano Quintet on the 24th, and then the 26th, Shostakovich Sonata for Cello and Piano, featuring artistic director Paul Watkins. Mm-hmm.
all those coming up at the Carytown Concert House, but there is so much more in Detroit, in Bloomfield Township, in Grosse Pointe, and even at the Capitol Theater and Arts Center in Windsor, Ontario. So it's an international festival, the Great Lakes Chamber Music Festival, going on right now through late June.
Yeah, those are great picks. As you were talking about pieces that are kind of conforming to the hall, I think that's really cool. There's actually, it reminds me of something else I found that's going up in Bayview, up near Petoskey, the Bayview Festival. They are having a concert. I can't tell you what's on it because nobody knows. They're encouraging people to bring their smartphones to this concert, leave them on, and then the program will be decided by the audience.
What?
In the moment. Really fantastic. Yeah. I'm really curious about how that all functions, you know, the back end stuff. But no matter what, it's going to be what the audience wants to hear. That's great as part of the Bayview Festival. In addition, they have another really cool thing that they're calling Bear to the Brahms Espoused. And it's a concert of kind of chamber music. One of the Brahms piano quartets, some love songs between the artists that are going to be performing are spoused, are married as they're performing for you. So the all happening at the Bayview Festival.
Wow.
Really interesting stuff up here in Petoskey.
That's crazy. We've explored Western Michigan, Southeastern Michigan. You've just taken us to Northern Michigan. Let's go on a drive now to Western New York. I mean, we're close enough, and we're not too far away from your old stomping grounds, the Finger Lakes. We will be at Lake Chautauqua, though. So we don't have a glacial lake beauty, but it's a beautiful setting at the Chautauqua Institute, the summer home of the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra. Many concerts going on there. Let me touch really quickly on just three. Towards the beginning of the season, July 2nd, the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra is joined by violinist Jennifer Coe. She's well known for performing a repertoire a little bit out of the standard. She doesn't step too far away, but it's not often played. Dvorak's Violin Concerto in A minor. A beautiful work for whatever reason. You don't really hear it that often, but you will with the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra and Jennifer Coe on July 2nd. Let's fast forward to August, beginning of August the 4th, with Joanne Folletta conducting the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra. Nice program with two sort of standards, the Enesco Romanian Rhapsody in A and Beethoven's Pastoral, the Symphony No. 6, a nice setting for that. And a newer work by J. Aaron Kernis, the flute concerto with Maria Piccinini performing.
I have no idea how that sounds.
Me neither. Never heard it before, didn't know of it. But if you go to the Chautauqua Festival, you can hear it on August 4th. You'll like this one a lot, Jamie. I'll jump ahead towards the end of the Chautauqua season. August 20th, Night at the Movies.
Hey,
there you go. Lots of John Williams, the music from Star Wars.
I'm sorry, Star what?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Right.
Some Saving Private Ryan, great score. And just to balance things out, music from Alexander Nevsky by Sergei Prokofiev. I can't think of a more thrilling marriage of film image and music than that work up to and that battle on the ice.
Yeah.
Sergei Prokofiev's music from the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra from Alexander Nevsky. Some classics, some new music, and some music from the movies from the Chautauqua Symphony Orchestra. Within striking distance, and Western New York, the cradle of the buffalo wing. So it's a win-win.
It'll have plenty of visitors at the Anchor Bar. Nobody's going to complain about that.
Jamie, thanks for this look and listen to classical music this summer in Michigan and around the region.
My pleasure. Hopefully see you at some of these events.
For Current State, he's Jamie Paisley.
And he's Peter Wolf.
And that's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, our favorite day of the week, Live Music Friday, we welcome the Pat Zelenka Project. They describe themselves as a rock, soul, jam, funk band from Lansing. They count among their influences classic blues and rock acts, Cream, The Beatles, Johnny Winter, Jimi Hendrix, the Pat Zelenka Project, tomorrow live in Studio S. Plus, we get a preview of the Flint Institute of Arts exhibition called Moving Toward the Light. The display, which opens this weekend, focuses on large-scale natural watercolor works of artist Joseph Raphael. That and more tomorrow on Current State. Our executive producer is Peter Wharf. Kevin Lavery directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, and to Drew Hill. The Current State podcast, anywhere, anytime, at iTunes, Stitcher for Android, and wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with us on social media if you haven't done so already. On Twitter, find us at KAR Current State. On Facebook, it's Current State from WKAR. Have a great Thursday. I'm Mark Bayshore. We'll see you Friday on Current State.